This is an ABC podcast.
In the top end of Australia, helicopters are a pretty common sight, but operators say they're struggling to afford skyrocketing insurance costs.
The helicopter industry is a hard one. Yeah, it's insurance is driving the industry, not the other way around, where we're making business decisions based purely and solely on our insurance now.
And we bring you somewhere magical. Ancient and mysterious bugs have been found thriving after their feared lost during the Black Summer.
Nature's Milky Way. It's a celestial experience. It's as if you're looking out into the night sky, no moon, and all you see is just these millions of stars on the ceiling, and that's how I think best describes it.
I'm Sinead Mangan, and this is Australia Wide. Now to Tasmania, where a new scheme to get people travelling and spending locally has proved massively popular. The $7.5 million government travel voucher program was launched this morning, but was closed, fully subscribed, within an hour of opening. The scheme was designed to get people travelling around Tasmania midweek and offers rebates of between $100 and $150 a night for accommodation, as well as $50 per person towards tourism experiences. But people struggled to log on when it opened at 9 a.m. this morning. Kate Ainsworth has this story from Hobart. Kate, now I saw on social media there was an awful lot around this today, and one person said, make yourself at home, more like make yourself hit the refresh key, because they were struggling to get on there. Did the government underestimate how popular this idea would be?
Yeah, Sinead, the government, I think, here knew that it was going to be a very popular scheme, but the Premier, Peter Gutwin, has said today that it was far in excess of what they actually thought the demand would be. At 9 a.m. when the site went live, yes, there was a lot of delays in trying to log on, a lot of people hitting the refresh button. There were some troubles loading, but yes, within about 40 minutes or so, all of the $7.5 million that was allocated for this voucher scheme was completely sold out.
How are they going to track how many of those vouchers? I think there was 21,500 vouchers bought. I assume you call it bought, that they're actually used. How will they track that?
Yeah, so they're going to be sending out a reminder email in 30 days. There is some questioning on social media, you know, how people are hoping that those that were fortunate enough to get in and get a couple of these vouchers will actually be putting them to good use and not putting them in their back pocket for a rainy day. So the government has said there'll be a reminder email in 30 days, and they're going to have a look and see how they're being redeemed in coming weeks. Interestingly, too, the Tourism Tasmania CEO, John Fitzgerald, did say that if people aren't using them, they'll be looking at ways that they can help redistribute the vouchers.
What's been the reaction of tourism operators to this idea of a travel voucher scheme?
Yeah, it's been largely really welcomed by the tourism operators. They are very excited at the prospect of, with school holidays coming up especially, that people will be getting out and exploring the states some more, whether that be accommodation or experiences or ideally both. You know, Tasmania is very reliant on tourism, and they've been really crying out for assistance since the coronavirus impacted here. So largely, it's been really welcome news by tourism operators here.
How busy are Tasmanian tourist spots at the moment? Did locals need an incentive to go, right, let's go and travel?
Tasmanians have been really receptive to, I guess, the fact that we are staying within Tasmania. I know tourism spots have been, I would say, a lot of them have been, a little quieter than usual. But for the most part, Tasmanians have already been getting out and exploring parts of the state since the coronavirus shutdown had happened and all the impacts had happened here. So it will really just help re-incentivise, I would imagine, people to get out there and explore more of the state that they already live in.
Has anyone opposed the scheme then, if they can see that people are out and about already?
There are some questions as to whether or not, I guess, the people, with the whole point of the scheme really is you've got to already outlay the money. So you've already got to have the accommodation booked before you can redeem the money. So there is questions of whether or not it's people who will be already going on holidays and can already afford to go on holidays, whether they will largely benefit, and those who might be doing it tough or living paycheck to paycheck might not be able to outlay the costs in order to go on these holidays and explore the state and utilise these vouchers. But for the most part, at the minute, it seems fairly well welcomed.
Kate Ainsworth in Hobart, thanks for talking to Australia Wide.
Thank you.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
Lisa Shreve is the CEO of the Busselton Jetty, and she's calling for a similar voucher scheme in Western Australia. Lisa, what are you seeing with tourism in the southwest of Western Australia where you are?
What we're seeing at the moment is people are quite happy to drive down and go to a hotel and a restaurant and a winery and a brewery, which is great. We're seeing the flop and droppers that come down to relax and they're sitting down for a week or two and then they're going back to Perth. Because they know WA so well, they're feeling that they don't need to go and do a tour with a tour operator or visit an attraction or an experience. They might have been there before. They don't know what's new or different. And generally, they're just looking to have a good time but just have a relaxing holiday.
So what does that mean for you at Busselton Jetty? Because there's lots of different experiences, underwater experiences you can have at the jetty. Are people likely to do that at the moment?
Yeah, we're finding that weekends are traditionally quite good. We're about 80% of where we would be last year, but midweek Monday to Friday is just terrible. Our August numbers were down 48% on last year. And during winter, we would traditionally survive on Singapore and Malaysian visitors. Obviously, they're not around, so we're hoping that people will still come down. We think we're getting the family market on weekends, but midweek we're just not seeing hardly any visitation.
Would a voucher scheme help you?
I think so. I think people need a bit of an incentive to get out and about, and unfortunately the people that don't have the income are the grey nomads or are the people with no children that might not have a job. They're on Job Seeker. They're all putting their hands in their pockets because they're worried about their future income. The change is coming on board, reducing their payments in September 28th, and they're thinking, well, we've got Christmas coming up as well, so maybe we need to start saving.
Lisa Shreve, is the experiences you're having at the Busselton Jetty reflected across WA? So if you were to look to the Kimberley and the flights over the Bungle Bungles or something, are they finding that they're dropping off as well?
Yeah, definitely. We've formed a group, it's a Team WA group of tour operators, experiences and attractions, and there's 65 of us on it, and nearly all of us are reporting a downturn in sales from the Whale Shark tours up in Ningaloo that have only got two or three on a tour when traditionally they would be full, right through to the southwest, the caves, the lighthouses, the farms, all those sort of places where the experiences are. It just looks like numbers aren't picking up at all.
How do you see the remainder of 2020 looking for tourism in the southwest of WA?
Well, we know that holidays, resorts and caravan parks, hotels are pretty much booked out until February in the southwest, and people have booked ahead for summer and they're hoping that it's going to be a nice warm summer and they can get out and about. So we're hoping that people will start coming back to the jetty, not just in school holidays but outside of school holidays. And I think all of the southwest is hoping that people get out and about once the sun comes out. It's been a pretty rough winter down here in terms of rain and wind and swells, and it's the same as it has been across Perth. So it just depends on people's, I suppose, confidence in the economy and confidence that they'll be able to continue to maintain their jobs.
And will you be pushing the WA government to look at a voucher scheme?
Yeah, definitely. We've put a number of suggestions forward to Tourism WA and the Tourism Minister, just as ideas for how we think that the government might be able to help those in the tour operator market with the experiences and attractions. We're just hoping that they'll look at Northern Territory and Tasmania's experience and see that it is working, and that might be a good way to keep the money flowing through all of the tourism industry in Western Australia.
Lisa Shreve, the CEO of the Busselton Jetty, thanks for talking to Australia Wide.
Thank you.
All around the country, you're on ABC Australia Wide.
I eat corn sometimes and my mum cooks it in the oven.
Well, Charles, how much rain did we have? He said, no, none. I said, you're mad, man.
ABC Australia Wide.
Because I came from Wynyard area where it rains and rains and rains. And when it's not raining, it's raining more.
On ABC Radio.
ABC Books, compelling stories from Australian writers.
During the Velvet Revolution, I fell in love with the city of Prague. 30 years on, I've returned to exhume her grisly history. I travel through the Black Palace of the Nazi SS. I meet victims of the communist secret police and the ancient pagan priestess who prophesied, "I see a great city. Its glory will touch the stars."
The Golden Maze by Richard Feidler. Book and audiobook available now in bookshops and online.
And right now you're on Australia Wide with me, Sinead Mangan. For almost half a century, theme parks have drawn visitors far and wide to the Gold Coast, but not in 2020. All were shut down during the height of the pandemic in Queensland, costing their owners millions of dollars. But as Dominic Cansdale reports, these theme parks are key to the region's recovery.
It's 1970, and a 6-metre-long killer whale called Ramu is on display for the first time at Marineland on the Gold Coast.
See, it may interest you to learn that just a few moments ago he started eating, and he took a couple of herring that had been brought over from the United States in the aircraft.
That's Marineland's director, David Brown.
And, I would say in the matter of a few days he'll be coming up to a platform and accepting food right out of our hands.
Ramu died within 3 months.
And they had no idea what to do. They had this big whale in this small concrete pool. It was just ridiculous.
Howard Kodra caught and trained wild dolphins throughout the 60s and 70s. He consulted with Marineland on Ramu.
I told him it won't work. He'll die. He'll commit suicide. And I watched lots of animals kill themselves in captivity, dolphins.
Marineland, like many theme parks on the Gold Coast, wouldn't last. But Howard would go on to work for other icons of the industry, including SeaWorld, Grundy's, and the precursor to Wet n Wild.
Oh, my, it was crazy. It was absolutely ludicrous how many people you could get up in this building, you know. It was just, it was just scary. In the peak season, the Easter break and stuff, we get thousands of people through in a day. Thousands of people.
2020 is a vastly different story. Village Roadshow, which operates Movie World, SeaWorld and Wet n Wild, lost between $10 to $15 million for each month they were closed. Since then, they've reopened, but at reduced capacity. But one big player is absent.
We've always seen, I think, throughout economic cycles that industries like ours usually rebound faster than others.
That's Andrew Yong, Chief Operating Officer of DreamWorld, which is set to reopen in 2 weeks.
In the last 35 or so weeks before COVID hit, we had just seen a change in our performance, and we're up 56% on our prior EBITDA performance, and we're really starting to see a new plan that we put in place starting to work, and then COVID happened and the rest is history.
DreamWorld's parent company, Ardent Leisure, lost $136 million this year. Revenue is down almost 19%. On top of that, it's pleaded guilty to 3 charges relating to the deaths of 4 people on its Thunder River Rapids ride in 2016. The maximum penalty, $4.5 million. But Mr. Yong is confident, buoyed by a $70 million loan from the state government.
People have spent a lot of time at home and a lot of time inside, and I think people want to get a chance to get out and do some traditional things that they might have otherwise done prior to all this going on, and some really wholesome family experiences.
The theme parks attract millions of visitors every year, a big deal for the broader economy.
About 47% of people that came to the Gold Coast visited a theme or wildlife park.
Deputy Director of the Griffith Institute for Tourism, Dr. Sarah Gardner.
As we see the re-emergence of domestic tourism, the real competitive advantage for the Gold Coast is its theme park offering. So they're a fundamental part of the destination's recovery.
For the future, Howard Kodra says the way has to be up.
I think that we should build on what we have. I think we should allow the theme parks that are here to expand and move. That would be great to see that.
Former dolphin trainer and theme park director Howard Kodra, ending that story from Dominic Cansdale.
Few sports stars have captivated Australia the way sprinter Cathy Freeman has.
Everything changed that day.
She brought the place together.
I cannot think of any other athlete that has been placed under so much pressure.
Graham is just in front of Freeman. She's going to have to work.
Freeman, Sunday night, 7:40 on ABC TV and iView.
It just feels like a dream.
Owners and operators of helicopters used in high-risk aerial work like mustering, firefighting and agricultural spraying are struggling to afford skyrocketing insurance costs. Some are choosing to leave machines uninsured, while others are reconsidering some aerial services. John Daly has this story.
The rising cost of insurance for helicopters is threatening to ground aerial services like firefighting and mustering.
Single traffic helicopter Charlie with Quebec Airborne 8 miles northwest of Sindel, tracking to the Cathay Gorge, remaining north of the Cashman River, not above 1,500 feet. Single traffic.
John Armstrong runs AgriMuster from the top end town of Katherine, and he says his premiums have almost doubled in recent years.
It really was noticed that about 3 years ago it started going up a little bit. And then it went up quite phenomenally in the last 2 years. It's now to a point where we're paying more for insurance than we are to pay off the machines.
And that seems quite remarkable because these are expensive machines.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it makes it difficult. It's got to the point where we're seriously thinking about getting out of the bigger machine market, which would mean we wouldn't do firefighting or ambulance work or any of that anymore.
How's the industry reacting to these, you know, the costs rising this much?
It's been very difficult for us. The helicopter industry is a hard one. It's quite expensive. There's not much. It's just like any industry. You've got your percentages you work on. So it's for anyone with loans on their machines, they have to pay it or they have to get out. So like us, we've thought about getting rid of the big machine. We're holding on while we can. Yeah, it's insurance is driving the industry, not the other way around, where we're making business decisions based purely and solely on our insurance now.
So insurance isn't compulsory if you own your helicopter outright, and some operators that do are at the stage where they're just uninsuring their machines altogether and taking the risk. Alice Springs Helicopters Managing Director Warwick Kerr has had to uninsure 4 of his 7 helicopters this year to stay afloat.
This year was the biggest hit we've had. I think we're up a bit over 50%, I think closer to 60% rise this year for the same activities. In good years, it probably would have been something that I would have worn. But with COVID this year, you know, our workload is probably as low as it's ever been. So we've had to take measures, uncomfortable measures, to offset those costs. And we've uninsured a number of machines. You know, we've kept the liability cover, but certainly the hull insurance, we've uninsured a number of machines to keep those costs down.
What do you make of this situation at the moment? You know, the situation that you and I imagine a lot of other, helicopter operators find themselves in.
Well, look, it's difficult to say. I don't see the landscape changing. I think it'll probably get a bit more expensive. As an industry, we haven't been particularly successful in offsetting these costs against revenue. Now, prices have always stayed fairly flat. And I guess that's what's hurting a lot of people now.
You've had to leave 4 machines uninsured. You know, what are you going to do going forward?
Well, it's a difficult question. But we've just got to keep costs down. And if that means downsizing, we've got to be more particular about the staff we hire. And really, you know, we've always been cautious about the jobs we do, but we just have to be... I think everyone as an industry has to get a bit better about how they go about approaching these jobs.
Aviation insurance broker Ian Tate says current premiums are actually cheap compared to the 1990s and early 2000s, and years of subdued prices and the exit of insurers AIG and Swiss Re from the market have reduced competition and capital. So Ian says the bubble has finally burst.
The percentage-wise increases, I mean, John, have gone anywhere between 50% to 300%.
So why has it gone up so much, so quickly?
It came down slowly, and therefore the point is that it came down for such a long period of time that eventually the underwriters are now trying to recoup their losses and walk a fine line between recouping and getting back into profitability without hurting as much as they can the poor operator and helicopter owner. So what the underwriters are trying to do to get back to a profitable situation is 3 things. They can increase the premiums that owners and operators are currently seeing. They can reduce their exposure by insuring only a proportion of the value of a helicopter. And the third type of reaction that they're having is certain uses in helicopters, they just will not touch. So if you've got a helicopter operator doing mustering, for example, some underwriters will insure them and others will insure helicopters, but not if they're used for mustering.
The Australian Helicopter Industry Association says it's in delicate talks with insurers, but declined to comment further.
John Daly with that story from Catherine.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
I didn't know Melbourne much. I knew where the racecourses were.
I'm making signs for the sleepy lizards.
Basically less eggs this year than what we would have expected.
The houses that are near the edge of the bush, they might encounter a snake up to 4 times a year, a death adder.
We'll just see how it goes.
On ABC Radio.
Now for something truly magical. Ancient and mysterious bugs have been found thriving after their feared loss in the New South Wales megablaze. The glowworms are tucked away in an abandoned railway tunnel in the Woolamai National Park near Lithgow, where the Gosper Mountain fire raged last year. As Kathleen Ferguson reports, the bioluminescent insect's survival has become a symbol of hope for the fire-battered community.
The forests around the Walgan Valley are the keepers of many secrets. Ancient pines and sacred Aboriginal sites are hidden away out of the public's reach somewhere in the vast stretches of bushland. But what people can go looking for is what's inside an abandoned railway tunnel deep in the Woolamai National Park.
It's nature's Milky Way. It's a celestial experience. It's as if you're looking out into the night sky, no moon. And all you see is just these millions of stars on the ceiling, and that's how I think best describes it.
Christy Carney is a Walgan Valley resident and runs an eco-tour business. She's been visiting the glowworms since she was little. She says the thought of losing the insects in the fire was distressing for her and the wider community.
To think that they possibly could be impacted by fires was just, it was unthinkable. There was those many weeks and even months where we just did not know whether they had been impacted, whether they were still alive. We had no information whatsoever.
But the seasoned bushwalker found them alive and doing well when she returned for the first time. She says the recent rain and the break from tourists because of the fires and coronavirus has given the bugs the time they needed to replenish.
It was really quite incredible. And also, what was happening too is that we'd had a whole heap of rainfall, and the glowworms absolutely love that. And to be able to see them from one end of the tunnel to the other end was really quite incredible, and it's something that I hadn't seen in many, many years. So that was, it was pretty amazing.
Thomas Ebersole runs the Nunes Hotel near the glowworms. He also thought the insects were lost. During the fires, he drove up the valley to see if the blaze had reached the tunnel.
My image of the glowworm tunnel burning was, one day looking up. That was an evening, and it was just, the whole place was on. You don't see fire, you just see smoke and the odd flare-up burning through that smoke, lighting up the smoke from inside. And I thought, oh, they're gone. The glowworms are gone.
Associate Professor David Merritt from the University of Queensland is a glowworm expert. He says the mysterious insects, which are in fact fly larvae, appear to have been protected by the old railway tunnel they have inhabited.
The fires were a worry because there were a number of locations with big populations of glowworms, and we know they were either hit by fires or fires were quite close. In caves, it seems they did okay because the caves obviously are sealed off from the outside environment to an extent, but I've talked to people who work in caves, and they've said that the glowworms have come back okay. They didn't seem to be really particularly affected.
Glowworms are unique to Australia and New Zealand, and there are only 8 known species here. Associate Professor Merritt says there is still a lot to learn about them.
They are pretty mysterious. They're very well known in New Zealand, where there's a lot of tourism there. People go to some very big caves with very big populations. But we started working on glowworms maybe 20 years ago, and we knew there were species in Australia, but they weren't formally described. They hadn't been described scientifically.
The way the insects have survived and flourished since the fires has become symbolic for the community, which is doing the same. Christy Carney says the people are healing, just like the bush.
Even though you may look at the landscape and it's charred and devastated, when you see something like the glowworms that are in the numbers that they're in at the moment, it gives you hope.
They show this resilience of nature, like all around here. It's been battered by that fire and subsequent storms, which took all the topsoil away. But it'll come back.
It's a pretty amazing story. I'd love to see them myself. That's Thomas Ebersole ending that story from Kathleen Ferguson. And that's Australia Wide for this Monday. Remember, you can podcast the show or listen back to the programme through the ABC Listen app or by visiting the Australia Wide website. Just search for ABC and Australia Wide. I'm Sinead Mangan. Cheerio.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.